Well, hello, folks, and welcome to another episode of the Outdoor Evolution Podcast. All right, so on today's episode, I want to talk about a topic that I get a lot of questions about. I think that a lot of us that go out and do various adventures, whether that's through hiking or bike packing or, I mean, even, you know, traveling abroad, suffer from, and that is post-adventure blues. That's kind of what we're going to, I guess, title the episode of this. Or for years, I've talked about post-trail depression. But, you know, it doesn't just affect people that get off trails and do hikes. I think it kind of spans a little bit of everybody that goes out and does some type of big adventure or some self-discovery for months on end, or maybe even weeks on end, and kind of this strange, this time where it's really strange to get back into quote-unquote normal life. And on today's episode, my lovely co-host is Mr. Justin Helmkamp. How you doing, bud?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me.
It's yeah, good man. To be here. Thanks for coming. Justin and I have known, I guess we've kind of known each other online or
internet acquaintances. Interwebs. Sure. If that's a real place.
And we both actually recently did the CDT this year.
Yeah.
And I think both finished up the three. Right?
All three? Well,
all three?
The big three, I guess.
The big three?
The ones that people care about, I suppose.
Yeah. So we'd been kind of chatting here and there, and we actually missed each other on the trail. I was trying to meet you on the trail in Yellowstone.
Yeah. I think I missed you by maybe 24 hours from Old Faithful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've been wanting to, you know, have a conversation about post-trail depression or post-adventure blues with somebody for a while, and I think what makes you an interesting person to chat with is, you know, obviously you're a thru hiker, so you have spent time doing that and going. I'm sure you've probably had your bout with post-trail depression, yeah?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Some much worse than others.
Right. But also, you got a little bit of some experience with dealing with some mental stuff in the outdoors, because you're a wilderness therapist?
Wilderness therapy field instructor. So not like licensed with a master's and all that, but the grunt work on the ground.
The grunt work.
Yeah.
An ant.
Gotta deal with the really not fun in the moment stuff.
Right.
So, but also get to deal with the really awesome in the moment stuff too.
Yeah. So not only I feel like not only do you have kind of the experience as the person on that side of maybe going through that, but you also work in a field where I feel like you're using nature to deal with it. So yeah, I figured it'd be a interesting person to have on the podcast today. So before we get into the discussion though on post-adventure blues, like I mentioned in the last episode, this season we wanted to start highlighting certain companies that have been a part of our hashtag give a shit campaign that we launched back in 2020, where we asked companies in the outdoor industry, the cottage industry in specific, to give back to public lands. So this week, our hashtag give a shit company spotlight is on the great folks over at Rology. Rology is a killer company that creates adventure-friendly tools for self-care while out in the field. If you have been like watching my gear videos for the past couple of years, you'll inevitably see what has become, I think, Rology's like flagship product in my list, which is their little mini cork massage ball. That little thing has really helped me step up my recovery game on trail. Being able to like roll out my feet after doing something like a 30-mile day on the CDT has really saved me from things like overuse injuries. Do you have one of those?
I actually do.
Do you?
Yeah,
did you carry one on the CDT?
Not on the trail, although I wish I would have.
Yeah.
But I actually just used it yesterday after getting out of the Grand Canyon, right? And I was like, my legs hurt so bad.
Do you have the mini, the little bitty one?
I have the big one.
I like
the big one better.
Yeah, I got the big one around here at the studio, but I always carry the mini one with me on the trail. They're just killer. You know, like I said, being able to roll out my feet at the end of a big day has just really helped me in the last handful of years. Like, I mean, you know, your feet just start killing you on the trail.
Yep.
And just being able to kind of grind out those knots and stuff really, really saves it. So aside from making like super sustainable self-care products from 100% renewable cork, Rology also donates 5% of their yearly profits to the National Forest Foundation, which means that if you decide to pick up one of their little awesome massage balls or rollers, whether it's on their website, Amazon, or wherever, you're helping to give back and to protect public lands. We're super proud to have Rology on the hashtag give a shit roster of companies that are doing their part to give back, and we thank them for supporting the podcast. Make sure to go check them out at Rology.com. So, post-adventure blues. Post-trail depression.
Post-trail bummers.
Post-trail bummers. I like that.
Yeah. That's what I've been rocking with on this one.
Yeah.
Post-trail bummers.
Bummers. yeah, it sounds better than depression, right?
Yeah.
It's funny, back in 2017, I made a YouTube video called How the AT Ruined My Life. And I've referenced that a lot on the podcast because that was like the video that kind of, I guess, stuck, right? Like I was making tons of media and videos and stuff. And that was the one that people tend to like really grab onto. And I guess what turned into whatever it has been for the past six years. But in that, you know, one of the main things I was talking about, even though like the title was tongue in cheek, was post-trail depression and how the fact that like, you know, one of the ways that it kind of ruined my life was my first, you know, and again, ruined life with like air quotes, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
For the better in a lot of ways. But one of the things that I really talked about in it was going out and doing the AT, having all these months where for the first time in my life, I'm around people with like the same goals and the same, you know, going through the same struggles and experiencing the same things every day, that you get super connected to like the people that you're around on trail or bike or whatever. And then whenever you get off and you're kind of like thrown back into the quote unquote real world, it's like, it's really, really hard to connect.
Yeah. It can feel very isolating.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. So let's see. I did the AT in 15. What year did you hike?
16 on the AT.
16. So did you go through post-trail depression whenever you got off the trail?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Explain how it was for you, because I know, like, I think that I've said enough how it was for me and like, you know, I started the YouTube channel and did all that, but how was it specifically for you? I'm always interested in how other people go through it.
Yeah. So my AT hike was more unconventional than I think a lot of people. I did a flip flop. I started with the intention of a northbound all the way, but I also didn't know what I was doing. And I started hiking from Springer June 5th.
Okay.
For those that don't know,
it
is very hot in
Holy
Georgia.
Shit.
I did not know what I was doing. It was not a good call. And so not only there weren't many people that I was able to hike with, which is kind of part of it. But after I think it was like 52, 53 days, I'm somewhere in like middle Virginia and it's been 85 degrees at night every single night. And yeah, I'm like, dude, this is brutal. Dumb. This sucks. And I had to get off trail for a little bit. And I was off trail for maybe like 2 days. With the intention of just going back home to seeing family
and
being done. And then as soon as I got back.
So wait a minute. Where were you again whenever you decided to pull the plug?
It was U.S. Highway 60. That would be the one that goes into, how they call it, Buena Vista?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember that.
That area. So like just after the Virginia
Triple. That was pretty far end to want to like pull the plug.
I was having a bad time.
That sounds like it.
Yeah. I remember calling my mom the day that I stopped hiking north, and in my mind, the conversation made sense.
Yeah.
And when she told me later, she was like, you're speaking gibberish. So we think I was maybe on the verge of heat stroke. It was not ideal at all. I'd gone off with the intention of just being done because I was having a bad time.
Yeah.
And I was home for maybe a couple days. So I was like, oh, dude, you started this. You set this as a goal, you need to finish.
Did you, just being off the trail for a couple of days, did any type of like post-trail depression set in?
It wasn't even that at that point because I was just happy to have air conditioning. That was really nice. But it was more of a mental thing where it was, you said you were going to do this thing, you made this your goal, go do it.
Yeah.
You know? And then in the back of my head, it's also looking at it like, well, what else are you going to do? Like, you left your job. You don't want to get a job right now. You know, I was relatively fresh out of college. I only worked for a little under a year post-college, and I didn't really want to go to that life anymore.
Right.
I was like, nah, so go finish it. And so about a week went by, and road tripped out to Katahdin, and then did Katahdin and started going south.
Nice.
And I had a much better time going southbound. It was a lot cooler, both literally and like heat wise. Yeah. I had a much better time. And by the time I finished up back where I had left off in Virginia, like I was happy. I was satisfied. I was like, you did what you came out here to do. And then my parents met me at the road, which was really cool.
Not to cut you off, but real quick, whenever you flipped up and you came south, mm-hmm. were you hiking around a lot of other people? Did you have other people to hike around, or were, because you started so late and then because you flipped up and came back, were you mainly alone the whole time?
I was, ironically, of the big three, the AT was my most solitary experience.
Wow.
Yeah. It's because I was late starting going north, and then I did Katahdin August 9th, which is like not crazy late, but late enough where it's most Sobos have already been on trail for at least 3 weeks to a month.
The reason I ask you that is because I feel like that is what kind of can add or take away from people getting post-trail depression.
Right.
So go ahead. I just wanted to ask you that.
Yeah, for sure. No, it's and it does play a part too, because I remember going through Virginia and sleeping in shelters almost by myself or only with one other person almost every night.
Sounds fantastic.
Yeah, it was great. Like I knew once I got through New Hampshire, all the Nobos that were going to finish later, I'd passed through that big bubble. By the time I hit Vermont, I wasn't seeing Nobos anymore. So I was like, well, I'm only aware of like five Sobos around me right now. I got a pretty good shot of just rocking up to any shelter I want to, which is nice. So when I finished up with trail, I had met some people going Sobo. A lot of the people that I did meet were true Sobos and not flip-flops.
Right.
So especially in the beginning going southbound, I had my trail legs already. I'd already done 800 miles.
Sure.
People were starting fresh. So I was going faster than most people. So that was the first part of my southbound, was just passing people. And then by the time I got to like the tail end of my southbound, it was just hard to find people in general. Because a lot of Sobos had either gotten off trail or were up ahead of me because they had started a month before and I just wasn't quite able to catch them. Which was fine. Like I enjoyed my experience with it. It was really cool being able to just like be with myself at the end of the trail.
Yeah.
And then when I get to the road where I had flipped from, my parents were there, with the big sign in the car and all that. So that was really cool to be able to share that finish experience with them, because they would not have done Katahdin.
Right.
So it was cool to have them there.
Yeah.
And progressively road trip back home. I think we took like 4 or 5 days from Virginia back to Wisconsin, where I'm from.
So at that point, were you excited to be off the trail? Like, were you ready to be off the trail whenever it was time?
I was pretty ready.
Okay.
Yeah. I was tired.
So you road trip back. Yeah. You had been ready to be off the trail, so I would assume now you're excited because like you're moving on to something else. When do you think that wore off?
About a day after I walked into my parents' front door.
Really? That fast?
And I looked around and said, I don't have a plan.
Mm.
What am I going to do? I'm a semi-recent college grad. I've only worked 9 months at outdoor education, which was great. It was a fun job.
Yeah.
I don't want to be inside. I want to be outside. There's no mountains in Wisconsin. I love Wisconsin. It's a great state.
Yeah.
For me, I need mountains in my life.
Sure.
And so I was looking around, and that was when the panic and the anxiety set in of like, I didn't have a plan at the end. It was I'm done hiking now. Now what? And now that the super straightforward way of how I've been living, which was literally just follow the trail. It will take you where you need to go.
Right. Super simple, right?
Super simple.
I feel like that's every hike. It's like you go out there and it's almost like, I think, and that's one of the big causes of something like post-trail depression is like, you don't really, like you have one kind of dead set goal.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have all these other things that are like cluttering your brain that you have, quote unquote, have to do all the time. Right.
Yep.
So it's like, you just have this one goal of like, this is what I do.
Yep.
And then that gets taken away from you. Like your goal is now, you've completed it, right? You've completed this goal. And then now it's like, all right, so now what the hell do I do?
Yeah. So now what? And coupled on top of that too, I'd been dating someone before trail in a long distance relationship. Yeah. And then that continued on trail as well, where it was, we could tell that our lives were going different directions. I was getting more into the wanting to be a bit of a rambler and hiker. Yeah. And that was my goal. I was 23. I wasn't ready to like settle down or anything like that.
23.
I was 23 when I finished. I was
29 when I finished.
Man, I'm 28 now. How does that feel? Yeah, yeah. Oh boy.
Yeah. Now I just feel old.
Sorry.
It's all right.
Different perspectives, because different points of life. But yeah, I got back and like, I don't know, that relationship was over. That was pretty apparent from the last month of
trail. Do you think it was harder? Like, so this is why I'm asking, because for me, it sounds like you got post-trail depression and like it started setting in hard because you kind of didn't have a plan, which I've heard a lot of other people say. And even like, you know, whether they're hikers or it's somebody that goes and does like, you know, backpacks Europe for a couple months, or someone that does like a 3-month bike tour, mm-hmm. like around the country. Like it's the same thing when they get back. It's like, all right, well, I had this goal. I was doing this thing. Now what do I do? And they kind of feel lost. Where for me, I mean, I didn't really have a plan. But at the same time, I don't think that's why I went through it. Mm-hmm. For me, it was because of like lack of connection. So
interesting. Yeah.
Because, you know, I hiked around a lot of people. I started in March, you know, right from the get-go, there was like a group of 5 of us that hiked together all the time.
And you're in the bubble.
Well, it wasn't really that. We had kind of our own little bubble, right?
Maybe like not like 2021 AT bubble, right. But like there's a lot more people than in June.
Right. Oh yeah, totally. Yeah. But you know, for me, like that's what I really got out of the experience. It was, I loved that. I loved the connection. Again, 29 years old, married, like at that point, had a house, had a career, left all that aside to go like do something completely different and feel like I was, like, this sounds like bad or something. Like that I'm really old, like feel young again, right? Like I go up there and you know,
appreciate life in a different way.
And I find this connection to all these people. So for me, when I got off the trail, you know, we found ourselves in Albuquerque, New Mexico. We just randomly moved there, like no rhyme or reason, didn't know anybody there, didn't know if we would be able to get a job, didn't have a plan for an apartment, nothing. We just showed up. We're like, eh, we'll figure it out. And for me, it was like trying to have a conversation with somebody and then be like, you know, want to find out about me. You know, like you just generally meet somebody and like, oh, this is my name. This is your name. This is what I do. This is what you do.
Yep.
And inevitably, whenever you get off of a thru hike, that's all you want to talk about.
Yep.
Because that's what you just got done doing for months on end, right?
My dad has a joke that you'll figure out if someone's a thru hiker because they're going to tell
you. Yeah, they'll just tell you.
Gives me a hard time about it.
So for me, it was like I would get into a conversation with somebody and they'd be like, you know, we'd be talking, finding stuff out about each other. And I would say, oh yeah, you know, I just got off the AT and blah, blah, blah. And I would start going into my hike and I would look at them. And while I'm talking to them, trying to connect with them, there would just be this blank ass dead look on their face. Their eyes would like glaze over and they'd just be like, cool. And like there was, after the conversation was over, I would just feel like empty because like I couldn't connect with anybody. And it didn't matter what I did and who I told. I worked at an outfitter. I worked at an outdoor store. Worked in a bike shop, but upstairs, like we sold backpacks, hiking shoes, trekking poles. And I would like start talking to somebody that would come in, you know, they'd be like buying a pair of trekking poles. I'd be like, oh, hiker, I'll go talk to him about what I just did. And then, you know, I would say something about the AT and they'd be like, what's the AT? Because I was in, you know, New Mexico. Yep. So then I was like, oh, CDT. CDT runs through New Mexico. Like, I'm thinking about going out and hiking a section of the CDT. And they're like, what's the CDT?
Yep.
I'm just like, oh, shit. So the reason I brought that up is the relationship you had. Do you think the reason that maybe, like, it didn't really work out in the end, was there a lack of connection there? Because, like, that person wasn't doing that with you for all those months? Or
So she started with me on Springer and did Springer to Neil Gap.
Okay. So she said, screw this. It's too hot. Why did you start so late?
Reality of having to have a job and pay bills and stuff was, you know, I was monetarily fine to do the trail. It was, you know, she was also fresh out of college sort of thing. Don't have any money. It's like, this is irresponsible. So there is an element of that too. And yeah, it was one of those things where it was just, my mom always told me that we seem to be better as friends than as dating, than as a couple, which in like hindsight, I totally agree with. Like, she's a wonderful person. She's great. I'm like, you know, won't get into too much about her personal life, but she's a wonderful person. And we still talk every now and then, which is fun.
She's listening. She's like, you better know.
Thrown her to the bus. No, I've absolutely nothing to throw under the bus for. But it was one of those things. It was just and I think this might be kind of a parallel to the age difference between us when we did this first hike, is me approaching things from a level of immaturity and inexperience with what is real life.
Oh, okay.
Because, you know, I had less than a year out of college up until that point. I was always in school or living with family, or I was, you know, doing that sort of stuff. And the, like, looking at life further down the road, I just completed this grand adventure. I'm supposed to feel all these ways about it.
Sure.
And yet I feel lost because I don't know anything else. Yeah. It is, the AT became my life. And then when I was done with it, I couldn't think of anything other than that.
Right.
And I think that's the impetus for what turned into, well, you're going to go hike the PCT now because you don't know what else to do.
That's what I was going to ask you. So do you feel like going to do another hike is how you dealt with it? Like, how you dealt with post-trail depression? Because I know there's a lot of people that do different things. So for me, it wasn't, you know, I didn't instantly feel like I needed to go do another hike. I missed it. I wanted to be in it. But for me, it was more like, I need to find some way to feel connected to it. Mm-hmm. Not like I need to go do another one. And that was like, you know, starting the YouTube channel, like being creative and like, oh, well, I'll talk about my backpack. I'll talk about my shoes. I'll make a goofy YouTube channel because, you know, I watched people's YouTube videos before I went to go hike the trail.
Same.
And so I was like, oh, I can do that. I can turn on a damn camera and talk about my backpack. That's easy. So for me, that's how I dealt with it. And then that allowed me to kind of, you know, I joke about it all the time. It's like, I have kind of been on trail for 6 years, like, because I started the channel and then like it did what it did. And then I've kind of just lived that life for 6 years. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I've never really stepped away from the trail, which is bizarro. Mm-hmm. Like, to really think about that.
Yeah.
Like, I've somehow like crafted my life around a thru hike. I've never really left the AT.
Yeah. It was, for me, it was a lot of like doing whatever I need to do to be able to make sure that come next spring I can be on the PCT.
Yeah.
And so that was the main thing that kept me motivated, even when I was working at REI and I hated it. And I was standing behind a cash register for 5 months, just going like, this is not rewarding. This is not fun. I don't even care that this is cool gear right now that I like to talk about.
Right.
It is strictly a means to an end. And like that part of my life, it was so focused on just show up to work, live cheaply. I was living with my parents at 23 years old and I didn't want to do that. And doing whatever I could to make sure I had the money to go out on the PCT because it was the only thing that I thought could give me that happiness. But it was also sacrificing my happiness at that time too.
Mm. Were you shooting photos at that time? Were you into photography yet?
So on the AT, I had started taking photos and putting them on Instagram strictly because my mom wanted to see
that's everybody's story.
Yeah. It was,
that's how they get it.
It was just like, friends and family want to see what I'm up to. All right, cool. And
I didn't have any friends or family that cared. So like, I didn't start the YouTube channel. I say that all the time.
I need strangers to care.
Yeah. I know so many people that are like, oh yeah, like I started a YouTube channel to show my family. Like, my family didn't care at all what I had just done. So I just started it to, you know, for my own benefit.
Yeah.
But yeah. So you, do you think being create, cause for me, that's been like the impetus for like the last 6 years is like, I needed to channel, I guess the post-trail depression into something, which made me a creative person, right? It made me start making videos. Then it made me want to shoot a film. Then it made me want to start a media company. Then it made me want to do a podcast. And that's kind of been my way to like deal with it. So you don't think for at that point you hadn't figured that out yet?
At that point, no. And
do you think that is now part of like?
Yes.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's an arc that we can continue on too.
I'm always interested in that because that's always my best advice for people. Like, you know, I get that question all the time is I'm thinking about doing a thru-hike. What's your best piece of advice? And, you know, like people I think always expect, oh, you know, go out and train, make sure that you know your gear, sure. Like all these like general generic answers. But mine is always like when you're out there, create something, whether it's for yourself or your family or for whatever. It doesn't have to be because you want to start a YouTube channel. It doesn't have to be because you want to become like Insta famous. Do it because one of my biggest regrets was when I was on the AT in 15, like I shot some photos on my cell phone and they're terrible. Like it was like a, I don't know, like an iPhone generation 2 or 3 or something.
But how much smile do you get from looking at those photos?
I love it. It's great. Yeah. But you know, my wife, she journaled the entire time. She like literally a handwritten journal, and she was able to get off trail. And I think use those to kind of stay connected and deal with it.
Yeah.
Where I so regret not filming my hike and not like, you know, photos, even like taking photos. I wish I would have taken more photos of the people versus the views that, you know, you can never capture in a photo. It's hard to capture an experience and stuff. So I always tell people like, you know, write while you're out there, shoot photos, shoot video, do a podcast like while you're out there, because when you get off, you're going to want it it to stay connected.
Yeah. I shot 7,000 photos on the PCT and I think almost 10,000 on the CDT. And dang. I still don't think it's enough. it's every time looking at it, I'm just being like, oh man, I remember that.
Yeah.
And it keeps those memories real and alive. And it's nice to have that little dopamine kick of,
oh yeah,
this is cool. Even if it's, you know, years ago, I can still look back at a PCT photo from 4 years ago and remember that day and remember who I was with. And that's the most important part to me is remembering who did I experience this with? Because this is and I lose this sometimes, but it really is a life-changing experience sometimes don't recognize because you're so damn tired.
Yeah.
And so being able to look back and be like, just remembering what happened is really cool. And yeah, I would 100% agree with that. To even if you don't think you're artistically inclined, just do something that you can remember this by one day, because nothing's going to last for forever. You're going to fish the trail or get off trail. Either's fine. Like, you don't have to complete a trail to have wonderful, positive, happy memories with it either. But it's one of those things that, you know, if you look at yourself 40 years from now, are you going to be happy that you took these photos and you have these memories? For me, yeah, absolutely.
So then getting off the AT, post-trail depression, gotta stop saying post-trail depression because it's supposed to be general. Post-adventure bummers. So
I don't feel the best.
I think we're going to change the title of the episode to Bummers.
Midway Bummers. Bummers with two taps. That's all he is. He's just a bummer.
So then dealing with it, coming off the AT was going to do another one.
Yeah. Right? And at that point, I hadn't gained enough confidence in my photography.
Yeah.
I shot all my AT stuff on the front camera of my phone because I had broken the back camera.
Oh, nice.
So I blind shot everything.
Nice.
which is fun looking back at the photos and be like, these are garbage and I love it. So for the PCT, that's when I first got into actually having like a real camera, which was nice.
So do you think though that like going to do the PCT, did that cure the post-adventure bummers from the AT?
It prolonged it.
Prolonged it.
I would say that it put it off.
Okay.
Because the theme there, even post-PCT, was still me at that point now being a 24-year-old.
Yeah.
Who hadn't really worked a job of any substance or meaning, going, I still don't have a plan.
Okay.
So, and that was something that I needed to work on.
Okay. So then you do the PCT. You get off the PCT.
Yeah.
You got it again. Bummers.
Even worse. It was bad. At PCT, I hadn't been to the mountains in the West until the PCT. I think I had done one quick road trip to Santa Fe with my dad in college over spring break. And that was my only experience of life west of Nebraska.
Right.
And I absolutely fell in love with the West.
Oh yeah.
That was the first time seeing it. I got to walk all the way through it. Same. And
kid from Indiana, like 29 years of never going past Texas.
Yeah.
West of Texas. So, oh yeah.
There's some cool stuff.
It ruined me when I came out here.
Totally. Totally. But and the PCT experience for me too, as I kind of alluded to earlier, the AT was very, not incredibly solitary. It wasn't like I was alone the whole time, sure. But it, in comparison to the PCT, the community that I found on the PCT was much stronger than the AT.
Yeah.
And so having that element of it too, being ripped away. Cause like after the AT, it was like, oh, I've done most of this by myself. I'm used to kind of being on my own. I have positive relationships with hikers out there. Sure. You know, there's still some people that, sure. You know,
but not as connected as when you're really spending some time with some people.
Yeah. Like there's two people I hiked the PCT with that I would be confident saying it was at least half the trail with both of them at different points, but like at both of them. And having that element of community gone again, on top of a bit of a trail romance that fell apart because it definitely like is, I don't know. It was one of those things.
So happy
like,
I've been married for 14 years. Yeah, never had to deal with trail romance.
You don't have to deal with them like, falling for somebody. It's fine. but that on top of it too, just like,
what do they call that for all of our thru hiker friends out there?
Pink blazing. Oh yeah.
Pink blazing. Or the other one is banana blazing. Have you ever heard that?
I'm gonna go with pink blazing.
I like the other way around. Banana blazing has always been one of my favorites. We won't get into what
that's not what this episode's mean, about.
But I'm sure somebody out there will appreciate that.
Yep. Yep. They know who they are. It's cool. There was that element of it too, where it's like at the end of trail, that's when like the emotions are high. It's like, totally. Oh my God, we're about to do this. Totally. Like you're feeling awesome and stoked on the experience and also very sad at the same time that it's starting to end. And then you get off trail. And again, I made the mistake of not really having a plan.
Right.
It was, I'm off trail now. Now what? And the instant, like, the gut reaction for me was again to just go, okay, I'll just go hike the CDT. And at the same time, I'm looking at myself objectively and being like, I'm 24 years old.
So this is 2017.
Yeah, end of 2017 in October, November.
Okay.
I'm looking at myself and I'm like, I'm 24 years old. I have no money to my name. I haven't worked a job that I've found incredible deep meaning in.
Yeah.
And I'm back in Wisconsin living with my parents.
Right.
And it's all in, you know, I've lost my community of trail.
So now you're going through the thing that I went through on the first trail, right? Mm-hmm. Can't connect to people as much.
Yeah.
Isn't that weird? Like,
it's so...
it's something I've tried to explain to people and like they almost don't get it. And sometimes I kind of feel like an asshole when I say it because, you know, I'll talk about being in Albuquerque and like having a conversation with somebody and looking at them and being like, oh, it doesn't matter what I say to this person. They're never going to understand what I'm talking about and how I feel about it and what it means because they weren't there.
Yep.
And, you know, I've tried to explain to people, it's like you, in your regular everyday life, you have a home life and you have a work life. Or let's say you have a home life and you have a school life, right? And the people that are in your home life know you and you have all these experiences together, but they don't know the life that you live when you're at work or school.
Yeah.
And vice versa. Like you can work the same job for 30 years and you know the people that you work with.
No idea what their home lives live.
Right. So they're always separate. But when you're on the trail, or whenever you're, say, on a bike packing trip, or you're just on any type of adventure where you're around the same people all the time and you're all going through the exact same experience. So you're all hot at the same time, you're all hungry at the same time, you're all wet at the same time, miserable, happy. It's like you get this, there's like a connection that you make with people that I've never found through anything else ever in life. Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't matter what I do. I mean, you know, even like shooting media and like working on projects and stuff, like with Jonathan, like, or anybody. It's like, you know, we're out in the field together and we're shooting stuff, and we're having a good time. But like, there's no connection quite like.
There's something that adventure about connection. There's something about the adventure experience that I think removes and strips away so much of what we think we are to what we actually are. That is. And this is not exclusive to through hiking by any means. I've found this just through traveling.
Oh yeah, totally. Same.
And there's something about having the expectation of who you think you should be removed that is very freeing and liberating, that people then get to see who you really are. And hopefully you also get to see that too, which I think is why so many people keep coming back to this lifestyle too.
That's why it's so addicting.
It's so addicting to be like, I feel the most connected with myself when I'm on a long adventure.
I think it's because you strip away all that stuff that doesn't really mean shit in life, right? Like at the end of the day, like, you know, fashion and, you know, just anything that comes with being normal.
Hey, I'm wearing my Melly right now, man. All right. I got to represent.
I'm wearing my app gear. Harry, I feel like there's some like conflict right now.
But throw fists right now.
Yeah. The hoodie versus the hoodie. But my wife always said it best. She always referenced it as like when you're on trail, you're at your raw self. And I think it's because everything's stripped away. And like, you know, again, it's like you're having a bad day. Like you're trudging up a mountain, it's pouring rain, you're freezing cold, and you're pissed off, you're upset, you're tired, you're hungry, you're wet, you're cold. And then it's like you get to the top of a climb and there's a person like standing at the top of the climb that's just like trying to catch their breath from doing the exact same thing. And then you get to like really connect with somebody. They know exactly what you're going through. They know exactly how you feel. So everyone is just at this like emotional raw state that I just don't think that like we get to be at in normal everyday life. It's impossible.
It takes a lot of intention and time that I don't think society is geared to allow us to
have. And I think it's because we're always caught up in like the hustle and bustle of everyday life, right? About all these things that we got to do and like, you know, work and paying your bills and going home and like feeding your dog, and everything is kind of like piled on, where when you get out on this adventure, whether it's a thru hike or bike packing trip or whatever, all that crap stripped away. And it's just like, there's just this one goal and that's it. It's all you have to think about. You know, obviously you think about how hungry you are and you know, what you're going to do
lot,
when you get
a
to
lot
town.
About how hungry I am.
That's mainly what you do. Is just think about eating.
Do I have my Snickers now, or do I wait another 15 minutes? It'll be like a treat. I should do one more mile. I can do this.
Yeah, it's scary, man. How you start like playing games with yourself out there.
Yeah. But that also, like, so bringing that up, looking at it from that setting, creating that space to be able to hopefully connect with yourself and other people in their deepest sense is generally the basis of wilderness therapy.
Right.
So that's we can segue into that.
Yeah. So
when you're ready.
Is that how you, so when you got off the PCT, did you get into that after your PCT hike?
So I had about 3 months back in Wisconsin after the first couple of weeks. I was, and my parents will tell you, I was a pain in the ass because I was just not happy at all to be there.
Because obviously you didn't, I mean, if you hiked in 17 and then like you just got done doing the CDT.
Right.
So obviously there was a gap. So you didn't need to go to another trail right off the bat to deal with it.
So my gut reaction right when I finished was to go do the CDT because that's what was comfortable. That was what I had done from AT to PCT.
That's how you dealt with it.
Yeah. And then in the moment, I'm looking at it like looking at myself as a 24-year-old living with my parents, working a retail job that doesn't give me anything in a place I don't want to be. Those are some big things that I need to address because this is not the cycle that I want to keep having for the rest of my life. And so what can I do that will at least address some of those things? And one of my friends that I had hiked a decent chunk of the PCT with had just gotten a job in a wilderness therapy company. And I didn't know anything about wilderness therapy. She was like, yeah, you're going to go guide kids out in the woods. I was like, all right, that sounds great.
I would have had the opposite thought. Like, that sounds scary as hell.
I grew up at summer camp, so like, okay. That's my
I'm not a shtick. Kid person. Me and kids just kids make me uncomfortable.
Yeah, it's all good, man. We all got our own things. But that was the thought where it was like, well, okay, if I get this job, then A, it gets me out to Washington.
Yeah,
I fell in love with Washington on the PCT. Gets me out of the Midwest. It gives me a reason to be outside all the time. And get paid to do it. It gives me opportunity to work with people on a more deeper basis than a, hey, would you like paper or plastic?
Right.
And so that was what was addressed with that job. Now, what came with it beyond that, that I had to learn the hard way. And you know, I've cried at that job multiple times. Yeah, I'm not afraid to say it's a hard job because you're working with teens and young adults who are coming from, you know, usually decently well-off families. It's not an inexpensive program, but that's not an excuse for all of the other emotional things that can go on in a family that really affect kids. And a lot of parenting things that can be the impetus or the catalyst for kids heading down a direction of drug abuse, trauma, assault, things that, you know, honestly, are kind of taboo for people to talk about. Yeah. I'm glad that the social sphere is getting better at this. Yeah, at saying absolutely. Like, hey, you know, trauma is a real thing. And being able to talk about it and not just holding it in will help you.
Yeah.
And so that element, you know, I'd come to that job because I wanted to be outside.
Right.
That was the element that I had to learn on the fly. Not on the fly, but I had guidance, but it was, you know, I'm responsible for kids that have attempted suicide.
Totally.
I am responsible for kids that come into the program still high off benzos.
Yeah.
I'm responsible for kids that show up in the back of a cop car, stuff like that. And so in beginning to work that job, it was now I am starting to find meaning in something beyond just being outside and walking around.
Right. But it sounds like, though, that it was still a connection to that because you're still outdoors, right? And you're still, I almost feel like what it sounds like to me is like by doing that, that might have helped you, that might have helped like with your post-adventure bummers to help someone else with their bummers, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And that the setting of being outside, like I could do a similar job in like a hospital.
Right.
But that's not where I want to do it.
Right.
My love for the outdoors was the thing that brought me into this.
Sure.
And so that is kind of like the confluence point between finding something that is still feeds my need to be outside and adventure and do something with finding meaning. And that's where they merged.
Yeah.
And I think that was very important to help pull me out of that post PCT funk. You know, this didn't happen right away either. Like I had the first couple months working that job, I felt so in over my head. Totally. I was like panicking all the time. And it was a very rough adjustment period. But as that went on, I was able to find meaning in something other than just walking around.
Right.
And I think that was very important for me to find that. And I think to get through post-trail bummers, you need to find meaning in something other than just walking around, which is kind of what I'm trying to get at.
I feel like find meaning in it, but still stay connected to it, right? Sure. Like still feeling like that you're not like alone in that experience that you had and like how great it was to have that experience and find some meaning out of that. So did photography then, so you shot more photos on the PCT.
I shot a
lot.
That's
when you started getting in.
That's when I started getting into it.
Do you think that helped as well when you got off the trail? Because like, were you at that point, were you pretty active on Instagram and stuff and like, and posting stuff?
I was trying more than I'm happy about saying.
You try to be Insta famous?
At that point in life, the vanity definitely took over for a little bit. Yeah. I was trying harder than I should have. Yeah. It's, I don't know. I was 24. I was trying to get my clout up or something. Yeah.
Get that clout up.
Yeah. Whatever.
Get it up, boy.
I look back on myself even from 4 years ago and be like, dude, what were you doing? Anyway. But yeah, that did start to serve as a creative outlet. And that also opened up doors to, as you said, connect.
Yeah.
Through photography and the hiking world. That's when I started making connections with other thru-hikers who were also photographers.
Totally.
And that was able to, that helped me be able to find that connection and that creativity in, you know, the common thread is we love the thru-hike.
Right.
But we can also go do other things with that too.
Totally. Yeah.
And so another perk of that wilderness therapy job, it was 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off. So I'm only working half the month and I have 2 weeks off to go do fun stuff,
right?
Which is great. So I think the first 4 months I flew somewhere every single time. That was the first time I came to the Grand Canyon, was in March of 2018 because I had a friend from trail that I had met that was living in Flagstaff.
Yeah.
And so I met him up and went to the Grand Canyon. So there was stuff like that too, that, you know, it's not the grand adventure, but it's still a cool adventure,
right?
You know? So it's the micro adventure, at least in comparison to spending 5 months, you know, out on a trail.
Totally.
Which I think was helpful too, there's definitely a physical component to post-trail bummers. You know, your body gets so used to all the endorphins and stuff just rushing through you all day long while you're on trail. And then, you know, a lot of people have a desk job. You can go and sit down for 8 hours a day. Your body's like, bro, what are you doing?
Right.
Like, no wonder you feel like crap because you're so used to feeling that like physiologically. And so looking at it from that standpoint, it makes a lot of sense why, you know, just it is so hard to get out of that funk.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You know, and I have friends that, you know, they just picked up trail running.
Yeah.
Trail running, you know, that seems to be a quick and easy way for people to.
Totally. You're still out there. You're getting the endorphins. Yeah.
Absolutely. I hate running myself, but I walk so I don't have to run.
But I can't do it anymore. I have basically no cartilage left to my knees at all after like years of doing triathlon and now, you know, doing all this through hiking, all this hiking.
Yeah.
Just gone.
I just blame bad genetics. I don't have a good reason.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure bad genetics have a lot to do with it. Thanks, Mom and Dad.
Love you, Dad.
Really appreciate that. But yeah, so I think kind of the, you know, what I wanted to have the conversation about is there's a lot of people I've gotten reached out to so much over the years from people that, one, I think just because people mention it, right? Like thru hikers always will mention post-trail depression.
Yeah.
And people, I've legit had people send me emails, been like, look, I am kind of a depressed person anyways. Like I kind of have some things I'm dealing with and that's actually why I'm getting into thru hiking, or it's why I'm going to go for, you know, go backpack Europe or go for a bikepacking trip because I feel like it's a way to deal with it. But I always hear people talking about post-trail depression. Am I going to get depressed when I get off trail? Am I going to go through this? And, you know, it's something that I've tried to reference because years ago when I made that video and I was talking about it, I had so many comments from people and I never really thought about it because I have no family that's ever been in the military. I've never served in the military. But I have a really good friend, one of my best friends, that has been in the Marines for years, and he's been overseas multiple times. And he actually reached out after I made that video. Because, you know, that was right whenever, if I was making a video, I would send it to my friends, like my old high school friends. They're like, look, I made a YouTube video.
Yeah, check it out.
Yeah, right. And he's like, you know, to me, it's like you're talking about the exact same thing that we go through when we come back from, you know, combat or a tour overseas. It's like it's really hard to integrate back into society after you've experienced something that most of society doesn't understand. And so, you know, a lot of it is very akin to that, but I always get those questions and always get those emails and comments like, well, how do you deal with that? So, I mean, what do you think? You know, my advice is always like, stay connected to it somehow, like stay, you know, you don't have to 100% like go off and, you know, do another thru hike
right.
or do another bikepacking trip or what have you right off the bat. But I've always said, you know, create something, do it while you're doing it. So then when you get off of the trail or off of the bike tour, or off of the, you know, time you spent in Europe or South America or wherever, you have something to kind of look back on, to stay connected to, and maybe just give yourself something constructive to do with it instead of like falling down this like deep hole of like, oh man, I don't have any meaning.
Yeah. Yeah. So I even got that coming back from New Zealand. I was there for 3 months, from 2018 to 19. And I did hiking, but I spent more time hanging out than hiking on that one because New Zealand's cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was definitely relatable in that even just coming back from a different country, it's westernized country. They speak English.
Sure.
Like there's McDonald's everywhere, all that sort of stuff. And
they speak English, but way more hilariously.
Fun.
Yeah.
Way more fun. Oh man. I kind of lost my head.
The sarcasm is unreal. Like it's I love me some Kiwis.
Yeah. They're great. I loved New Zealand. And then like even coming back just from that to coming back to the States was still culture shock. It was like, hey, I've been used to driving on the left side of the road for the past 3 months.
You were over there for that long?
3 months, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it was cool. Yeah, I did the South Island of the TA, and then I spent about a month and a half in Queenstown.
Nice.
Working in a hostel, just slumming it. It was great.
Excellent.
It was a good time. But yeah, even coming back from that, it's just like this, it feels weird to even like, I'm coming back to Washington. It was a place I've been living for a year. And it there's a weird disconnect because I've gotten used to this is how life is. And then boom, big change.
Right.
I hopped on a plane and flew for way too many hours then life was different again. But I 100% would echo the create something.
Yeah.
Cause I think that is really important to focus your energies into something that is constructive. I think also for me, and something that I have gotten better at the more that I've matured in coming off of some big crazy adventure is having a plan.
Yeah.
Having something that you can either look forward to or something that you know that, you know, you can, that you enjoyed before. Maybe for me, you know, coming off the CDT, I still, you know, post trail bummer still a thing.
I was going to ask you, do you feel like you have it now as much as you've had it in the past?
No, not at all.
And is it because you know, like you have an outlet for it?
Yeah. So when the pandemic hit in 2020, I was initially going to go hike the CDT.
Right.
A lot of people were put it off. Cause you know, we thought it was a zombie apocalypse and, you know, thought it was going to be bad. But I ended up, you know, losing my job in Seattle where I was at the time. Cause I was just doing something to just kind of like pass the time to get to trail. And ended up moving to Bend, Oregon. And I moved in with a friend from the PCT who then between the two of us, we kind of wrangled in a couple more friends to move to Bend. And I went back to working wilderness therapy. And so I was able to go back to a job that it's hard and there's a lifespan on it, but it was like, hey, you know, a lot of people are out of work right now. I'm just happy to have a job, which is great. And then be able to, you know, live with a good friend and have other people that I can create this kind of home in Bend over this year was really good. And so I laid the groundwork for something to come back to.
Yeah. Then it sounds like most of those were trail people too. Luckily, people from
decent number of trail people, which is cool.
Like you still get to live on, you still get trail, right?
Right.
Like golf trail. Yeah.
It's a perk. It's a perk.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even beyond trail, they're just wonderful humans.
Totally.
But you know, having the ability to relate on that level too is nice.
Definitely.
And so laying that groundwork, knowing that in the next year, 2021, I'm going to go hike, but also understanding I don't want it to keep turning into the same cycle of I do a trail and then I don't have a plan.
Right.
And I don't know what to do. So it was, all right. So I went, hiked the CDT, and now, you know, came back to Wisconsin to see family for a little bit, cause that's important to me. Got to see my grandpa who's not doing so hot, and was able to road trip back west with my dad. You know, it was a meaningful experience that I wanted to share with my dad. And I think that was the hardest part for me thus far since trail was that road trip, because it was, I'm on an adventure again. It's not the CDT and I'm really missing the friends.
Totally.
And we even went back to a couple of the same spots that I had hiked through. Okay. Near Yellowstone and Tetons, nice. Which is amazing and really cool to be able to show my dad that. And just like,
I'm surprised you're able to do that. Like, I don't want to see any part of that trail for a long time.
I went to the cool parts.
I don't want anything to do with those states for a long time.
For those that don't know, me and Darwin had very different CDT experiences, but we don't need to get into that. But it was cool to show my dad that. But also there was that pang of feeling like, oh man, I was here 2 months ago with this really cool crew of people and I miss them.
Yeah, I had the same thing on the PCT. Like when I got done with the PCT, my wife and I took a road trip coming down Highway 1. We went from,
you're like Olympia all the way down to like San Diego?
Yeah, all the way down. We actually went to San Diego because we had a friend there. And, you know, we stopped off at a couple places, which was cool. And then we did a little bit of trail magic for some southbounders that were coming down. So, yeah, I totally get what you're saying. Like, it's
weird to, I think the first time you return to a trail location is the weirdest.
Last year in 2020, at the beginning of the year, my plan was to go out and rehike the first 900 of the AT. This was my 5-year anniversary of like my first hike. And I tell you what, hiking, like I was only out there for 8 days, but I started at Springer, and hiking through those sections, stopping at those shelters, I was having a weird out of body experience. Mm. Like I would be sitting at a shelter and all of a sudden, like out of the corner of my eye, I would see like my buddy Rube, which I'm sure he's probably listened to this, and I've told him this, like I saw him like standing there, and I was like having these weird like
flashback.
Oh my God, it was so bizarre, man. Like I'd be coming up a climb or something, and all of a sudden I would see a log like sitting on the side of the trail, and instantly it would bring back a flashback of like somebody sitting on that log.
Yeah.
And it happened.
I've had that too.
Oh, it was so bizarre.
It's weird. I the one time I've been back to the AT since it was by Caledonia State Park in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
And I just did like a 5 mile out and back.
Yeah.
And the whole time I'm walking, it's like, oh my God, I remember this.
Yeah.
And this weird? Is so weird. I was like by myself. I was like, I remember climbing these stairs. I remember like touching this rock. And it's so
I've only
weird.
Had that on the AT though. Because like I had, you know, on the CDT, I had done basically all of New Mexico between the years of 2016, 2017 while I was living in Albuquerque. And aside from parts of the Gila, like I don't really remember a lot of it, which is weird because that was after the AT. But man, when I was on the AT, it was like every single rock, every single log, tree, shelter, everything. Mm-hmm. Like I remembered like it was yesterday.
Are you a visual like learner? Okay.
Absolutely.
And that might be part of it too. That might have something to do with it. Cause I have also talked to other friends about this and they're like, yeah, you know, it's like, I know it was here. I don't remember it, but I'm definitely like a visual
learner. Same thing about
learner.
Like the PCT. Like I don't remember shit about the PCT at all. Like I'll start trying to remember like towns, sections of the trail. And like with the exception of a few places, I don't remember a lot of it. I mean, I don't remember a lot of the CDT, and we just got done with it.
Like, to be fair, there's a lot that you just don't want.
Yeah,
to remember,
it's like a week and a half ago is when I finished, and I still can't like remember like certain parts of it or towns or stuff. But for some reason, the AT just really sticks in the memory.
That's interesting, because
I really sticks in there.
I think part of it with me too is like, you know, living next to the PCT for so long now that like that's kind of faded because now I have so many other memories that are not through hike
replaced,
related that are like around there. Like I've climbed South Sister like 5 times now.
Yeah.
You know, that's right next to the PCT. So there's stuff like that. But yeah, it is a weird thing to like, and for me too, it's also songs.
Same.
I'll occasionally like, there's like, I could,
same.
Go with like 10 to 15 songs that anytime I hear it, I immediately jump back into reliving hiking either AT, PCT, CDT, TA, whatever it is.
I was going through that on the CDT. I was listening to certain songs that I hadn't heard in a long time or just stuff that I generally listen to, but because I was on trail and I was listening to a song that like I was really listening to on the PCT, all of a sudden I would have like a weird flashback to the PCT and be like, oh, this section kind of reminds me of the PCT. Mm-hmm. Now it probably wasn't anything like the PCT, but because of the song, it kind of put me back in that, you know, in that moment, which is really wild.
It's really weird. And I think that can be a contributing factor to post-trail bummers.
Yeah. I think so too.
I listen to music when I drive my car around or whatever. And it's not like I never want to hear those songs right. again, because it is such a positive, you know, happy experience for me. But, you know, I could definitely see how it would be, oh, man, this song, I remember listening to this going yeah. up, you know, whatever pass yeah. and just like, that can totally wreck your day. Cause it's like, yeah. damn it. I'm just like, I'm driving into work right now. I got to go sit at a desk and this thing just popped out of nowhere. Cause my phone's on shuffle or whatever. And that, I could totally see how that would ruin your day.
It's wild how, you know, talking about that, talking about going back out to the AT and getting those flashbacks, talking about connecting to songs, it shows you how much doing something like a through hike, doing something like some sort of big adventure where you're completely changing your life can really, really stick with you.
Yeah.
You can like really hold on to that for a long time. So yeah, again, I think that the best thing to do for anybody that's looking at getting into some sort of adventure, whether it's a through hike, whether it's a weekend backpacking trip, like, or it's going to say live out of a van for like a month and travel around in national parks, or
I just did rim to rim to rim and yeah. I'm already just like, this is one of those crazy cool experiences. Like 3 days
yeah.
and it's one of those things, I'm looking at the photos, I'm working on editing right now, I'm yeah. like, yo, these, oh, I'm gonna think about this for a while,
right?
Like it could be something that's not months.
Yeah, I just think the best way to deal with it is, and know that if you're listening to this, if you're thinking about going to do that thing, that, I mean, you're probably going to deal with it. Like it's going to happen.
It's going to happen.
It's, I've rarely met people that like easily integrated back in after doing something like that. There's just a handful of people I've met that were like, oh yeah, I got done with the trail. Never had a desire to do another one. Yeah. Went off and done other things. I mean, my wife's kind of that way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she was able to take those journals and reflect back on them. And, you know, every once in a while, like she'll still see a white blaze or something and get a little like sappy for it and think about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, that's great.
But for the most part, she was able to be okay with it. But I think the majority of people will go through some form of post-adventure bummers,
yeah.
like for sure. I mean, or, you know, the evil D word, depression. Like
mm-hmm.
it's just a part of it. I think the best thing that you can do is stay connected to it, whether that's creatively, whether that's getting a job like Justin did, where he's still connected to the outdoors. He's still connected to that experience. And he's still, I guess, kind of giving back to that experience by helping other people. Or, you know, whether it's being drastic and jumping onto the next trail, because, you know, that's why there's so many like serial through hikers that yeah. will hike the same damn trail
mm-hmm.
10 times in a row every single year.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's their way to stay connected to it. But I think the most important thing that you can do is stay connected to that experience. And don't try to fight it. Don't try to push it off. And, you know, again, my best advice is if you're going to go do it, create something. Even if you don't think that you're a creative person, create something. Because it really helps when you get done. You can look back at it. You can relive those memories. And then, you know, maybe you can start a YouTube channel. Maybe you can
yeah.
make goofy videos, and then all of a sudden you're sitting in a podcast studio
yeah.
talking to somebody about the same thing.
Find some fulfillment.
Absolutely.
Find some fulfillment.
Yep.
And I think that creative space is very important because it is self-expression. You can do whatever you want with it.
Yep.
But find a reason to find fulfillment in something.
Yep.
And don't do what I did and just wing it.
Yeah.
Try
have
to
have a plan.
Have a plan.
Have a plan. It's important.
Try to do something that, you know, try and set yourself up for success.
A huge thanks to Justin for joining me as co-host on this episode. If you want to check out some of his amazing photography and how he's been able to funnel his post-adventure bummers into something creative, go check out his website at justinhelmkamp.com, or you can follow him over on Instagram at justinhelmkamp. If you want to help support the podcast and get bonus content like early access to episodes, hours of exclusive video, and even a weekly bonus podcast with yours truly, you can become a member of our Patreon community, and we will leave a link in the show notes. If you've been enjoying the podcast, do us a big old favor and give it a rating or a review wherever you're currently listening. Make sure to check out theoutdoorevolution.com to keep up to date with all of our new articles, courses, products, and more. You can follow us over on Instagram at The Outdoor Evolution. And folks, that's going to do it again for another episode. Thanks so much for tuning in.